I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's November 23rd, and we have a lot to talk about. We're 2 days away from Thanksgiving in the United States, and I want to make sure you know how thankful I am for each of you, for listening to Real Talk MS, and for sharing your questions, your feedback, and your suggestions with me. I'm thankful for all the scientists and clinicians who have found time in their already busy schedules to talk with me each week and share their work with us. I'm thankful for all my friends at the National MS Society who make doing this podcast so easy. And I'm thankful for all the work that my assistant Liz does to help me keep up with social media and what sometimes feels like a million other projects. I hope each of you gets the kind of Thanksgiving you're hoping for. For many of us, the arrival of the holiday season is often accompanied by what can feel like an endless stream of dinners, celebrations, and other holiday events that all seem to feature lots of food options. Joining me today to talk about how and why good nutrition plays an important role in managing MS is registered dietitian nutritionist Mona Bostic. But before we get to my conversation with Mona Bostic, there are a few other things that you should know about. This year, it looks like a record number of people in the United States will be traveling to spend Thanksgiving with friends and family. And as the holiday season presents us with more opportunities to mix and mingle, please protect yourself, your loved ones, and others around you by being fully vaccinated. And today, that means also getting that vaccine booster. Now, I make it a point to never offer any medical advice on this podcast because I'm not qualified to do that. So now I want to share the guidance that's provided on the National MS Society's website when it comes to the COVID-19 vaccine. The science has shown us that the COVID-19 vaccines approved for use in the United States, that's the Pfizer vaccine, the Moderna vaccine, and the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, are safe for people living with MS. The vaccines are not likely to trigger an MS relapse or have an impact on long-term disease progression. Most importantly, the risk of COVID-19 far outweighs any risk of having an MS relapse from the vaccine. People with progressive MS, those who are older, those who have a higher level of physical disability, those with other health conditions like diabetes, high blood pressure, obesity, heart and lung disease, and pregnancy, members of the Black or Hispanic community, are among groups with the highest risk of hospitalization due to COVID-19. Individuals in these high-risk groups are especially encouraged to get vaccinated. People who have had COVID-19 in the past can get infected again. So if you've had COVID-19, you still need to get vaccinated. And as we get ready for those family celebrations, holiday parties, and just venturing out in the world, make sure you get your booster as soon as you can. And by the way, you can get that booster at the same time that you get your seasonal flu shot. If you're currently on a disease-modifying therapy, continue it unless you're advised by your MS healthcare provider to stop or delay it. We know that some DMTs may make the vaccine less effective, but will still provide some level of protection. If you're taking Kesimpta, Ocrevus, or Rituxan, you may want to talk with your MS healthcare provider about coordinating the timing of your vaccine with the timing of your disease-modifying therapy. Given the potential serious health consequences of COVID-19, getting the vaccine as soon as possible may be more important than optimally timing the vaccine with your DMT. And now I will add a bit of personal advice. Please don't make a guess about this, and don't rely on social media to find the best answer, unless the people you're interacting with on social media happen to be neurologists. Otherwise, please contact your MS healthcare provider and have this conversation so that you can enjoy the holiday season without having to worry about spending part of it in a hospital. To be clear, being fully vaccinated and receiving a booster doesn't mean that you can't contract COVID-19. But it does mean that it's highly unlikely that you'll face catastrophic circumstances if you do. And with more than 750,000 Americans having already lost their lives to this virus, isn't that the whole point? If you're not yet vaccinated, I hope you'll take a moment to review the National MS Society's guidance about the COVID-19 vaccine for people living with MS, and you'll find that link in today's show notes. Science loves acronyms, and sometimes it's easy to see why. For example, I'd like to share some news with you about CRISPR, a powerful tool that allows researchers to easily alter DNA sequences and modify gene function. CRISPR has many potential applications, including correcting genetic defects and treating and preventing the spread of disease. But it's much easier to talk about this technology by referring to it by its acronym, CRISPR, rather than trying to explain our way through clustered, regularly interspaced, short palindromic repeats, which is the full name for the bacterial defense system that forms the basis for CRISPR's genome editing technology. And the reason we're talking about CRISPR is because a team at Vanderbilt University Medical Center used this technology to study the role of metabolism in the functioning of immune cells. And they discovered a target, a specific gene that could be exploited to treat several different inflammatory diseases, including MS. This particular gene makes an enzyme that's vital to the development and functioning of the immune system's T cells. And using CRISPR to genetically remove this enzyme was effective in treating the mouse model of MS. So this gene, technically referred to as MTHFD2, may represent a potential drug target for a future MS therapy. I'll add my usual disclaimer here that there is a huge difference between a mouse brain and a human brain, so there's a lot more work to be done here. But I think it's worth talking about how science is leveraging cutting-edge technologies like CRISPR to identify potential pathways to not only treating, but even preventing MS. And as this specific work continues, I hope we'll have even more to talk about. Now, if you'd like to review the details of this research, I'll warn you that it's not for the weak of heart. It's pretty high-level science. Nonetheless, you'll find a link in today's show notes. Tolebrutinib is one of a new category of disease-modifying therapies called BTK inhibitors. This investigational drug is currently undergoing clinical trials, and you might remember that this past October, in episode 214 of Real Talk MS, one of the clinical trial investigators gave us an update on the encouraging results from the phase 2 clinical trial for tolebrutinib. Now, Sanofi Genzyme, the drug's manufacturer, has announced that the phase 3 clinical trials for tolebrutinib will include the use of digital biomarkers. And before we can talk about why this is a very good idea, let's talk about what a digital biomarker is. Many people already carry around a powerful computer that's capable of monitoring and recording health information in real time. That device is called a smartphone, and other small wearable devices are capable of doing the same thing. This real-world health data are collectively referred to as digital biomarkers, and they provide scientists with an additional perspective of how a particular therapy might be impacting someone as they go through their day. The name of the digital biomarker company that has partnered with Sanofi Genzyme is Conexa, and while we don't know exactly which digital biomarkers are going to be tracked in this clinical trial, we do know that Conexa has created a wearable device that continuously monitors gait and balance. Now, this device can record walking speed and distance, so it gives scientists a real indication of how a particular therapy might be impacting someone's mobility. And this kind of real-world measure is so much better, so much more realistic than that timed 25-foot walk down the hallway of a neurologist's office. One of the endpoints of the tolebrutinib clinical trial is measuring whether there's been disease progression. And in addition to all the other data that they'll be collecting, being able to understand how a trial participant's walking may have changed over the course of this clinical trial is going to give scientists a level of insight that they've never had before. Sanofi Genzyme is conducting clinical trials for tolebrutinib as a treatment for relapsing remitting MS as well as progressive MS. We'll keep you posted as these trials continue, and if you'd like to see whether you qualify for one of the tolebrutinib Phase 3 clinical trials, you'll find a link to the short online screener in today's show notes. If you're living with MS, being on a disease-modifying therapy slows disease progression and extends your quality of life. Another way of extending or even improving your quality of life is to make nutritionally sound food choices. In a moment, registered dietitian nutritionist Mona Bostic joins us with some timely advice when it comes to making smart choices in your meal planning. As we head into the holiday season and many of us find ourselves confronted by a barrage of decadent and delicious foods, it seems like the right time to talk about the importance of healthy eating. And joining me to talk about what it means to eat healthy and why that's especially important when you're living with MS is Mona Bostic. Mona is a registered dietitian nutritionist who was diagnosed with MS in 2008. And she's dedicated to the proposition that making smart nutritional choices can play a part in avoiding preventable disease and improving the quality of life for people living with chronic disease. I also have it on very good authority that Mona is an avid Chicago Cubs fan. Welcome to the podcast, Mona.
Yes, thank you. And how did I don't know how you found out about the Chicago Cubs fan, but yes, I am a huge Chicago Cubs fan.
Well, that's just part of my job. What does it mean to eat healthy, and why is that particularly important to someone living with MS?
That is a great question, and it's really important to know that there is no way, if you will, there's no just one way to eat healthy or eat well with multiple sclerosis. It is, however, very important for people living with multiple sclerosis to want to adopt healthy eating patterns. That is because eating well is an important contributor along with other health-promoting behaviors to overall health. But these health-promoting behaviors become especially important for people with MS because health status, or sometimes referred to as health-related quality of life, is an important indicator for how well you live with MS. And food choices play a really important role in that. So it can be really important to include healthy foods in your overall eating pattern.
Can the food choices that someone makes cause their MS to either get better or be worse?
That is an unfortunately common question, but the short answer to that is no. The longer, more nuanced answer to that question is that there's no evidence at the moment to suggest that what you eat or don't eat can have a direct impact on your MS disease course. The health behaviors, including the foods we eat consistently, as in every day, are going to have a much more significant impact on your health collectively than what you eat occasionally. And by engaging in healthy eating and other health-promoting behaviors, you will be indirectly impacting how well you live with MS.
Are there specific foods that people living with MS should avoid? Or on the flip side of that question, are there foods they should be eating more often?
No. Again, the short answer to that is no. There's no food that you should either eat copious amounts of or abstain from entirely simply because you have multiple sclerosis. It's really important to, again, limit saturated fats, sodium, added sugars, and highly refined foods. That's limit. That doesn't mean never. It just means limit them. And the only thing that everyone should be avoiding entirely are trans fats.
A lot of what we read on social media can be confusing because there are so many conflicting messages all being posted at the same time. And so many diets claim to be a treatment or even a cure for MS or MS symptoms. So let's start with what's become the big question. Is there a so-called MS diet, a diet that's been shown to be the best for people living with MS?
In spite of what you may have read on the internet, the answer to that question at this time is no. There's no intervention or diet that has been shown to impact the MS disease course. And a diet or an eating pattern by any name that includes lean proteins, a variety of colorful plant foods, whole grains, heart-healthy unsaturated fats while limiting the sodium, sugar, saturated fat, and refined foods and trans fats, regardless of what you call that diet or eating pattern, that is what would serve your body well.
And what about gluten? Should someone living with MS be avoiding gluten?
According to Dr. Google and the internet, if you will, gluten is the bane of all existence. However, gluten is just a protein, and it is a protein that some have an allergy to that is called celiac disease. And so if you have celiac disease, whether you have MS or not, definitely abstain from gluten. Now, when you refer to, some people refer to themselves as being gluten sensitive or gluten intolerant. That's kind of a gray area, clinically speaking, and there's no evidence to suggest that there's an association between that and multiple sclerosis. And the MS Society research says that, again, it's currently unclear whether gluten has a relationship to MS. So just be mindful that if you have celiac disease, you should definitely avoid it, but there's no real reason to avoid gluten if you do not have celiac disease.
There are social media posts that also suggest that nightshade vegetables, things like white potatoes, peppers, tomatoes, and eggplant can cause inflammation. Mm-hmm. Is that true? And do these vegetables have any kind of impact on MS?
So these vegetables, nightshade vegetables, as they refer to, do contain an ingredient that when consumed in enormous quantities can have a clinical impact in our body. However, eating an isolated tomato or potatoes or eggplant with your meal is not likely. There's no evidence to support that that is related to a clinical response in humans. There's just no reason to avoid these foods because they are otherwise very colorful plant foods. They bring a lot of antioxidants and phytonutrients, vitamins and minerals to the plate. They're an important part of eating well. If you have concerns about that, speak with your healthcare team before removing a lot of food from your eating pattern because it may be unnecessary. There's no conclusive science to support that.
What do we know about intermittent fasting and its impact on MS? Is this a beneficial eating strategy?
Intermittent fasting, of which there are a variety of versions of that or iterations, but basically intermittent fasting is an eating pattern that cycles between periods of eating and not eating or fasting. There's been research done in the cancer population as well as the MS population. And a recent study that the MS Society did concluded that while the folks in the calorie control group did lose weight, they did not note any impacts on their MS. It is important to note that intermittent fasting may be contraindicated or problematic in certain populations, and that is because it can interfere with our natural hunger and fullness signals. Can be problematic for blood sugar control or regulation. And it's definitely not recommended for anybody who has a history of disordered eating. Those are just a few of the concerns around that. But if you're considering that, definitely speak with your healthcare team. And I strongly encourage you to work with a registered dietitian.
We're seeing research that points to vitamin D deficiency as a risk factor for developing MS. And I know that studies are underway to determine if vitamin D levels influence MS disease activity. I'm wondering whether you can suggest any foods that are good sources of vitamin D.
Yes, vitamin D is one of those nutrients. It does have a role in our immune system. And as you say, research is underway to determine how that impacts living multiple sclerosis. But unfortunately, there are really not an abundance of foods that are good vitamin D sources. There are a few, rainbow trout, salmon, fish, and cod liver oil, if you enjoy that. It is a way to get vitamin D. However, unless you're consuming these things on a regular basis, it's going to be really difficult to get an adequate amount from food sources alone. Vitamin D supplements can play an important role in correcting that deficiency, but it is really important to work with your doctor because we will all, there's no one dose that's appropriate for everyone because everybody absorbs that nutrient a little bit differently. So definitely let your physician monitor your progress correcting that deficiency.
We know that healthy eating plays an important role in our overall wellness, but we also know that for a variety of very good reasons, it's a habit that can be difficult to sustain. Mm-hmm. Now that we're heading into the holiday season, when many of us are going to find ourselves at parties and family gatherings that usually have lots of really delicious foods that may not align with a healthy diet, can you share some tips that we can keep in mind during holiday parties and get-togethers?
Yes. The first one is enjoy the holidays. Absolutely. Happy holidays, happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, and anything that you're celebrating, enjoy that. Because food is fuel. And I understand we may want to include foods that align with our healthy eating guidelines. And to do that, you can intentionally include those foods next to, along with, or beside all of grandma's favorite baked goods. And that's fantastic. That's a good thing to do. Because food, while it is fuel, it is much more than fuel. It's also traditions and celebration and cultural heritage, as well as memories that we're building around the table as family. One of the things that is really important to remember, and a patient that I worked with, who's an engineer, he's a gentleman and an engineer, so we like to quantify things. And so we worked together and we determined that there are 365 days in a year, during which if you eat three meals a day, you will have more than 1,095 opportunities to consume foods. What you eat consistently is going to be way more impactful on your health than what you eat occasionally. So in other words, what you're eating throughout the year, if you're eating in a health-promoting way, that there's no reason to not enjoy the holidays and all your favorite delicious celebratory foods. And please don't feel guilty around doing that.
One way to keep your healthy eating plan on track is through meal planning. But weekly meal planning can be time-consuming, and it can become one more thing that just starts to feel like a grind. Do you have any tips for fast and easy ways to plan healthy meals?
Yes. So sometimes meal planning, social media has made us think that we have to have special containers and they have to all be lined up and look beautiful in the refrigerator. But really, meal planning is just having a plan for what lays ahead during the week and investing a little bit of time in the weekend or whatever day is not a work day for you to determine how often, like how many meals are required each week and what will be on the menu. That can be a really good idea. They don't have to be fancy and they don't have to be Julia Child recipes with 37 steps and 1,000 ingredients. Simple food is healthy food. Some people find a trick like using a theme night to organize recipes. So like Chicken Monday, Taco Tuesday. So you build your collection of recipes around these things and then you just select them as you're building your meal plan for the week. And then if you have an opportunity to, again, invest a little time on the weekend, to make sure that you're a little bit closer as you get to dinner time each week. So in other words, you could even get the kids involved and have in an age-appropriate way, have the kids tear up the lettuce in advance. Or maybe if you get a rotisserie chicken on the weekend to be used in meals later in the week. So it doesn't have to all be done at once, but any steps you engage in that help you get a little bit closer to mealtime throughout the week will absolutely pay dividends.
What about that very familiar scenario when you come home after a long day at work and you just don't feel like cooking, or you're simply experiencing a day or an evening of MS-related fatigue? That's when giving in to unhealthy food choices starts looking like an easy option. What can people do instead?
Yeah. So when I love this question because when I work with people, I often encourage having a backup plan before the having the plan, because life happens and MS shows up in ways and on days when you are not prepared for it. So it means that going into it, you should know. I'm telling you, it's really a good idea to have a backup plan for when that happens. So I encourage everyone to make a list of 3 to 5 foods that your family enjoys that are easy to prepare, don't require a recipe, and that the ingredients are always on hand. And then put that list of foods on the refrigerator. So on those days when MS shows up, the meeting runs long, or you get stuck at the kids' soccer practice, you can look at that fridge and know that you've got 3 to 5 things to select that do not require much planning or forethought. This can be something like breakfast for dinner. It can be grilled cheese and soup. It could be, in my house, that often looks like quesadillas, where you take 2 flour tortillas and you can put whatever you want between those tortillas and it becomes a meal. So it doesn't have to, again, it doesn't have to be fancy.
Well, Mona Bostic, thanks for all that you do to improve the quality of life for people living with MS. And thanks for talking with me today.
Absolutely. I thank you so much for inviting me.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/221. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or text. November is National Family Caregivers Month, and if you find yourself with some downtime over the long Thanksgiving weekend, you might think about binge listening to all 8 episodes of my special podcast series, The MS Caregiver Conundrum. In those 8 episodes, you'll meet some amazing MS caregivers, each of whom occupies a slightly different caregiving role. You'll learn about some great resources for MS caregivers. You'll hear some sobering research about caregivers, and we'll even get into all the ways that public policy impacts MS caregivers. You'll find all 8 episodes of the MS Caregiver Conundrum at mscaregiverconundrum.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.